Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Thursday, April 18, 2024. House Speaker Mike Johnson makes it clear he will not support a change to make it tougher to bring a motion to vacate the Speaker's chair after earlier reports that such a change was being considered to be added to the House Rules Committee resolution that would govern House floor debate on bills to aid Ukraine, Israel, Palestinians, and Taiwan. And as some Republicans have been threatening to force a vote to vacate to remove Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican, if he goes forward with a bill to help Ukraine that does not include U.S. border security. The House passes a resolution condemning Iran's drone and missile strikes on Israel and affirms Israel's right to defend itself. CIA Director William Burns discusses the ongoing negotiations for a ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas and the release of hostages held by Hamas and other groups. Senate begins debate on reauthorizing FISA Section 702 spying authority, which is set to expire Friday at midnight. That section allows surveillance of non-U.S. citizens outside the U.S. without a warrant, but Americans' data can be collected if they're in contact with the targets, and several top Senate Democrats would like to offer an amendment to require a warrant. The Senate votes against repealing the Environmental Protection Agency's tailpipe emissions rule for cars and small trucks, part of President Joe Biden's advocacy for a switch to electric vehicles. And a dozen or so members of the Kennedy family endorse President Biden's reelection, as another Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is making an independent run for the White House. Story from Axios: Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, has opted not to attempt to change the rules on removing people from the Speaker's job. He said Thursday the decision comes as Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, and Congressman Thomas Massie, Republican of Kentucky, threatened to pull the trigger on a resolution to oust him amid conservative outrage over the Speaker pushing Ukraine aid without border language attached. Johnson had been urged by some members to restore the threshold for introducing a motion to vacate that was lowered by former Speaker Kevin McCarthy to a single member. Johnson will now push forward on the foreign aid package, knowing he'll likely face an ouster attempt in the coming days. That was the story from Axios. Here is some of what happened leading up to Speaker Johnson's decision. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene speaking to reporters on the steps of the U.S. Capitol.
Kevin McCarthy, while he was staring down the barrel of a loaded gun, he never made a move like this behind closed doors and made deals with Democrats to change the motion to vacate. And we're hearing that's exactly what Mike Johnson is doing. It's unprecedented. This has never happened in history, and it's completely wrong. He owes our conference the truth, and he owes Republicans answers.
Have you heard from colleagues who...
Will you go forward today?
I'm waiting to find out what's going to happen. And this is the type of betrayal that Republican voters are absolutely fed up with. You know, he really crossed the line with most Republicans across the country with what he did on the FISA vote last week, being the final deciding vote against warrants and then passing FISA. And now he's moving forward, making funding to Ukraine, $60 billion to Ukraine, his top priority, the most important thing he can do in a speakership. And he's willing to work with Democrats to make that deal and get that done and change the motion to vacate to do it.
Have you heard from other colleagues who say that this potential action could put them more in your camp of wanting to motion to vacate sooner rather than later?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've told you guys I will not speak for my colleagues. That would be extremely disrespectful for me to do. It's up to them to come forward and say it. But if Mike Johnson goes in there and attaches to the rule, which is the Rules Committee is meeting right now, so we'll see when that vote takes place. If he attaches a rule to change the motion to vacate during the and then uses Democrat votes on the Rules Committee, he's going to prove exactly what I've been saying correct. He is the Democrat Speaker. I don't think that's ever happened in history before, and that's going to be the message that will definitely change everything.
Speaker Johnson was asked directly why he believes it's worth losing his job potentially over putting the aid to Ukraine on the floor, and he said it's because it's the right thing to do. What do you make of that response from the Speaker?
He's serving Ukraine first and America last, and that would be the worst thing to do for a United States House of Representatives Speaker, third in line to the President of the United States, to do nothing for American citizens. Think about this. Monday was tax day. So as Americans were paying their hard-earned tax dollars to this government, the Republican speaker is hinging his entire ability to stay speaker on sending $60 more billion to Ukraine. I can't think of a worse betrayal ever to happen in United States history. And here's what's really ironic. The constitutional attorney, Mike Johnson, is literally betraying the American people in order to keep his grip of power on the speakership.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, speaking to reporters on the House steps. Congressman Matt Gaetz, Republican of Florida, was also involved in the discussions with Speaker Mike Johnson over potential changes to the motion to vacate. And Matt Gaetz spoke to reporters as well on the steps. Again, this was before, later in the day, Speaker Johnson announced that there would be no change in that motion's threshold.
You have been opposed to moving forward on a motion to vacate. Now that they're talking about possibly changing those rules, have you changed your mind?
I hope we don't have to go down that road. It was very puzzling and concerning to me that Congressman Van Orten, in a conversation we just had on the floor, repeatedly was insisting that we call a motion to vacate to the floor. He was demanding it in kind of a unhinged way.
So, I mean, where are you on whether or not you would support a motion to vacate at this moment?
Well, I didn't support one when I woke up this morning.
So do you support one now?
We got more time in the day.
What do you think of just in general about his...
Let me clarify that. I think a motion to vacate is something that could put the conference in peril. And Ms. Boebert and I were working to avoid that. Our goal is to avoid a motion to vacate. But we are not going to surrender that accountability tool, particularly in a time when we're seeing America's interests subjugated to foreign interests abroad.
And explain what was going on with Mr. Van Orden.
He kept demanding that we file a motion to vacate and demanding that we do it in a privileged way.
And what does that mean? I mean, does it surprise you in this climate that people might be saying that? And we heard this from Mr. Massey. We've heard this from Ms. Green.
The only thing I gleaned from it is that Mr. Van Orden is not a particularly intelligent individual.
What did you... You spoke to the speaker. What was that conversation like?
Tense.
Why?
Because we don't want to pass this bill. We do not. Look, the only win we've got in the House of Representatives is blocking the Senate supplemental. And so if he's ready to throw in the towel on that, what are we doing here?
And what did he say in response?
I think that he views the Ukraine issue very differently than we do. We're worried about America's border. He seems to be more worried about Ukraine's.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, Republican from Florida, speaking to reporters outside the U.S. Capitol building. He referenced Derek Van Orden, that's a Republican congressman from Wisconsin, and the Senate supplemental refers to the president's supplemental spending request for national security, which, as the Senate passed, includes aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and the plan in the House is to divide that up and pass them on separate bills. But the discussion about motion to vacate... Again, the Speaker, Mike Johnson, making an announcement late in the afternoon that he will not push for any change. Currently, it's one member can bring the motion. But during the day, a few Republicans giving support for a change. Don Bacon, Republican from Nebraska, posting on X, when the Dems had the majority, their motion to vacate the Speaker rule required the majority of the majority, which was a 124 sponsor. In January 2023, we changed the rule to require only one sponsor. This has weakened our majority and Congress as a whole. It's time to fix. And Congressman Dusty Johnson, Republican from South Dakota, posting this video.
You probably remember the terrible idea last year when 8 renegade Republicans joined with every single Democrat in the House to throw the Republican Speaker out of office. It's a terrible idea. It didn't make America stronger. It didn't deliver any conservative victories. Well, now, again, we've got a small group of people who are upset that they're not getting their way. It's the era of divided government. Nobody gets everything they want. So they want to throw out the current Speaker of the House. It's a terrible idea. I'm working with a group of members to change the rules so that they can't get that done, so that one knucklehead can't put the whole House into disarray by forcing another Speaker vote. We've got real problems. We have a southern border in crisis. We're $34 trillion in debt, and America needs to be projecting strength abroad. We should focus on that instead of these D.C. power games.
Congressman Dusty Johnson, Republican from South Dakota, posting that video. And Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, posting on X late afternoon. Since the beginning of the 118th Congress, the House rule allowing a motion to vacate from a single member has harmed this office and our House majority. Recently, many members have encouraged me to endorse a new rule to raise this threshold. While I understand the importance of that idea, any rule change requires a majority of the full House, which we do not have. We will continue to govern under the existing rules. And the proposal, what was being reported, possibly to be added to the resolution coming out of the Rules Committee to make a change to the motion to vacate, would be for the foreign policy bills, which are under consideration. And they would fund Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and the fourth one would be other national security priorities from the Republicans. Politico reports that House Democrats have adopted a wait-and-see posture on Speaker Johnson's four-part foreign aid package as it faces a key procedural Rules Committee roadblock. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries' message to the morning caucus meeting, stay united and frosty on the foreign aid package. He gave no marching orders on exactly what would be required from Democrats. Their votes will almost certainly be needed to get it over the finish line. That was from Politico. The bills would provide $26 billion for Israel, $61 billion for Ukraine, $8 billion to counter China in the Indo-Pacific, including helping Taiwan. And the Israel bill also has $9 billion for humanitarian aid, which could be aid to civilians in the war zone in Gaza. And that fourth bill, the package of foreign policy measures, that would allow the sale of frozen assets from Russian oligarchs to pay for the aid to Ukraine, and potentially forcing the sale of TikTok, the video app, and authorizing stricter sanctions on Russia, China, and Iran. Here's some of the House Rules Committee meeting today. Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut, is the ranking member on the Appropriations Committee, making an impassioned plea for the Ukraine money.
I want to walk away from this whole debate about administrations, because it is not the moment at hand. One sentence about border security. I sat in the White House, not in a classified meeting, where Republican colleagues said that we won't have Ukraine without bipartisan border security. And then you know what? We accomplished bipartisan border security. It wasn't, and it was, oh, you can shake your head all you want, but Democrats and Republicans voted for border security. And you know what? It was Donald Trump who said, don't give Biden a win. You think about that. Put that aside. This moment is now. The United States Senate, you can have all the views you want about the United States Senate, but hold them for this debate. It is now. It is about the United States House of Representatives. We have the opportunity to do what we do here, and that is to govern. And what are we doing in governing? Is to be a world leader. And for months and months, we have been diddling around where people are dying in Ukraine. Don't talk about what weapons we want to give them. We're not giving them what they need now, and it has been months in the coming. And we ought to today, immediately, we should have picked up that Senate bill, brought it to the floor, and voted on it immediately, and we would be out of here today in doing it. Let us not rewrite what is happening. The moment is ours. And if the House of Representatives abdicates its responsibility, yes, the history will write the story, and that it is on us. When we had that moment, we said no. I, for one, will not say no. I will provide Ukraine with the weapons that it needs to go forward. I would provide Israel what it needs to defend against Iran. I am overwhelmingly in support of our being able to deliver humanitarian assistance at a volume that will meet that need, because we're standing by. We're standing by and watch Ukrainians die. We're standing by and watch Palestinians starve to death, Sudanese starve to death, Haitians, etc. If that's the way we want to be remembered in history, it's certainly not the way I want to be remembered. So let's vote on what we need to be doing here today, casting our vote in favor of the national security package.
Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut, ranking member on the Appropriations Committee, testifying today before the House Rules Committee. The Rules Committee setting the rules for floor debate for the bills that would fund Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, and other national security priorities. A member of the Rules Committee, Ralph Norman, Republican from South Carolina, said during the meeting he would not be supporting this effort because of what's not included, and that is U.S. border security.
We're ignoring the main issue that the American people have said is keep our own border secure. Now, I've heard the argument that, well, the Senate won't buy it. Well, I'm sorry. If the Senate won't buy it, they won't get funding, is my opinion. They should not get funding for anything because America, our sovereignty is at stake here. That's why I'm voting no on this. I cannot sit back and let something that does not have the security of this country, Congressman Meeks, I cannot do it as we have an invasion at the border that affects everybody. It's an insult, and I think Austin mentioned it, it's an insult to those who have done it legally. The president is totally responsible for this. It's under his watch over the last 3.5 years that he's opened the borders up. And the not even putting the LNG requirement that we buy gas from America in here, if you really want to support Israel and Ukraine, stop buying gas from OPEC countries that don't like us. It's not that complicated. So my reason, and it's tough to do this. It really is. But I'm simply not going, I cannot vote at any level. And I get it. We're going to probably pass it out of here. But it's something that I can't live with, and it's something that the American people are screaming about. And anything moving forward, I would hope, would have some type of legislation that will shut the border down. And it's not, hopefully, it would be bipartisan to shut it down, but it's just not.
Congressman Ralph Norman, Republican from South Carolina, member of the Rules Committee at today's meeting. The text of the foreign aid bills, again, it's Ukraine and Taiwan and Israel and that fourth bill with various national security priorities from the majority Republicans, was released on Wednesday. And there's a 72-hour rule the Republicans are following, allowing members to review the text before voting on it. And that would place the debate and votes on the bills for Saturday. The House Freedom Caucus released an official position urging a no vote from all House Republicans on the supplemental package rule. It reads, the House Freedom Caucus will vote no on the rule for the America Last Foreign Wars supplemental package with zero border security and urge all House Republicans to do the same. To secure the border, we must kill the rule. This is Washington Today. The House all this week has been debating and passing bills aimed at Iran. Today there was a resolution condemning Iran's airstrikes on Israel and affirming U.S. support for Israel to respond however it deems necessary. Congressman Tom Kaine Jr., Republican of New Jersey, started the debate.
This is not just a threat to Israel. This is a threat to the United States and to all of our partners in the Middle East. And that is why this moment is of such tremendous strategic importance. Iran and its proxies are testing the resolve of Israel, the United States, and the international community. We absolutely must restore deterrence against Iran to protect our vital national security interests in the Middle East. And that means staying shoulder to shoulder with our friend and ally, Israel. We are stronger together. Together, this coalition literally shot missiles and drones out of the sky, protecting cities and citizens alike. Like some of my colleagues over the Easter recess, my wife Rhonda and I traveled to Israel, and we were able to see firsthand the impacts of the conflict on the people there. The resolve of the Israeli people is stronger than ever. HRES 1143 makes a simple, clear statement that we stand with Israel and we support Israel's right to defend itself and to restore deterrence, including by responding to this attack as is appropriate. And also makes clear that our long-standing commitment to Israel's security, including through arms sales and security assistance, is ironclad. Finally, it urges full enforcement of all of our sanctions against Iran and its proxies. Madam Speaker, we must not forget what Israel experienced over the weekend is, unfortunately, a reality of everyday life in Ukraine. Our adversaries are working closer together than ever before in undermining the American-led international order that has kept peace in the world since the Second World War. Before the United States ultimately joined the war, Winston Churchill showed the world the fortitude it took to look into the face of authoritarianism. He declared the democracies of the world stand up for their beliefs and they would endure. We must project that same message today and in the future. Our allies and our partners are watching what actions this body takes. We must project that Churchillian confidence.
Congressman Tom Kaine, Jr., Republican from New Jersey, on the House floor. Congresswoman Madeleine Dean, Democrat from Pennsylvania, also supported this resolution.
I stand by Israel and its right to defend itself and condemn in the strongest of terms Iran's direct attack on our ally. And it is my hope that Israel listen to what many of its allies are saying and not take steps that lead us into a greater regional war. As President Biden has said, our defense against Iranian threats to Israel is ironclad. We have Israel's back, and we will not yield to Iranian threats. I support this resolution, and I yield back the balance of my time.
Congresswoman Madeleine Dean, Democrat from Pennsylvania. The House passed this resolution by a vote of 404 to 14. The 14 no votes were one Republican, Thomas Massie of Kentucky, and 13 Democrats. Story from NBC News. More than 6 months since Hamas militants attacked Israel and seized more than 250 hostages, it remains unclear exactly how many of the captives are still alive in Gaza. According to U.S. and Israeli officials, the uncertainty has caused anguish among the families of those held in Gaza, and international efforts to negotiate a ceasefire deal and the release of at least some of the hostages. A proposed ceasefire formula calls for Hamas to free 40 hostages who are women, children, or sick and elderly men, and in return, Israel would release possibly hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. But Hamas so far has been unable to confirm it has identified 40 hostages who meet those criteria, and that has bogged down the negotiations, U.S., Israeli, and Western officials said. That was from NBC News. The CIA director, William Burns, has been at the center of these negotiations, and he spoke about it today at the George W. Bush Presidential Center in Dallas, Texas.
I've gotten very wrapped up over the last 6 months in efforts to negotiate a ceasefire and the next release of hostages that Hamas has held since October the 7th. It may seem a little strange for a CIA director to be as engaged in that, but my counterparts in this effort are the director of Mossad, Israel's intelligence service, the head of Egypt's intelligence service, and the prime minister of Qatar, someone I've worked with for many years and a very capable negotiator. So, the end of last year, we achieved a briefer ceasefire and the release of 100 of those hostages, women and children at that time. We're going to keep working hard at this. It's proven very difficult. It's a big rock to push up a very steep hill right now. I meet with the families of hostages, and it breaks your heart because you can see in very human terms what's at stake here as well. So I cannot guarantee that we're going to succeed in this effort. We put, along with the Qataris and Egyptians, I think a pretty far-reaching proposal on the table in Cairo a couple of weeks ago. It was a deep disappointment to get a negative reaction from Hamas through the Qataris and the Egyptians to that proposal. Right now, it's that negative reaction that really is standing in the way of, you know, innocent civilians in Gaza getting the humanitarian relief that they so desperately need. Because part of the challenge here, it's not just the number of trucks with humanitarian goods that get to the Gaza border, it's being able to have at least a short term or the beginnings of a longer term ceasefire that enable you to distribute those goods to people who so desperately need it as well. And so we'll keep working hard at this. As I said, I cannot honestly say that I'm certain that we're going to succeed, but it's not going to be for lack of trying. And I do know that the alternatives are worse. They're worse for civilians in Gaza. They're worse for hostages and their families. I think they're worse for all of us.
CIA Director William Burns at the George W. Bush Presidential Center in Dallas. The U.S. today was set to veto a United Nations Security Council resolution to give the Palestinian Authority member status at the United Nations. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel telling reporters, note that Hamas, a terrorist organization, is currently exerting power and influence in Gaza, which will be an integral part of the individual state in this resolution, and for that reason, the United States is voting no. The U.S. Senate today began debate on a bill to reauthorize FISA Section 702 spying authority for 2 years. That's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And Section 702 allows surveillance of non-U.S. citizens outside the U.S. without a warrant. The bill has passed the House with reforms, but minus a proposed amendment to require a warrant, since sometimes data of Americans that the non-U.S. citizens are in contact with is swept up in that spying. President said he would sign the bill into law if it reaches his desk. Section 702 authority expires Friday at midnight. Here's the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, on the Senate floor.
Today, the Senate will vote on cloture on the motion to proceed to the Pfizer reauthorization bill sent by the House earlier this week. This is a very important procedural vote. I urge my colleagues on both sides to show strong support for moving forward on this bill. Now, we obviously don't have a lot of time left before Pfizer authorities expire. In fact, less than 2 days. But we will try as hard as we can to get Pfizer reauthorization done today. If not, members should expect we'll have votes tomorrow.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor on Thursday morning, and that first procedural vote did pass, 67-32, more than the 60 needed. Without a deal on debate time and possible amendments, opponents could run out the clock past the Friday midnight deadline, and the authority could expire, at least for a short time. The Senate Majority Whip, second in line on the majority side, Dick Durbin from Illinois, spoke about an amendment he would like to offer to require a warrant.
At one point, there were 3.4 million inquiries of American citizens in 1 year. The agencies of our government said, well, we're going to do better. We won't be invading the privacy of individual American citizens. We'll do better. And they did better. But there's still an outrageous and unacceptable level of the misuse of the FISA authority to have surveillance into the privacy of individual American citizens. And that's why I rise today. After the long history of the abuses of this authority, spying on Americans without the constitutional warrant is required. Congress should not rely on internal executive branch procedures as a substitute for court approval. If the government wants to spy on my private communications or the private communications of any American, they should be required to get approval from a judge, just as our founding fathers intended in writing the Constitution. A bipartisan amendment in the House would have required the government to obtain a warrant before searching Section 702 databases for the communications of American citizens. But this critical reform narrowly failed on a tie vote, 212-212. I want to offer a narrower amendment that would only require the government to obtain a warrant in a small fraction of situations where it actually wants to read or listen to private communications of American citizens. The vast majority of warrantless FBI searches on U.S. persons do not return any results. Less than 1.6% return any measurable results. Based on recent FBI statistics, that would amount to just 80 times a month that the FBI or other agencies that are engaged in this 702 surveillance would have to ask for a court order to protect inquiries and investigations into private communications of American citizens.
Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, the majority whip, speaking on the Senate floor as the Senate has begun debate on reauthorizing Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That authority expires Friday night. You can follow the Senate live, gavel to gavel, on C-SPAN 2 television, also on the free C-SPAN Now mobile app. And Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi there. I'm Jonathan from C-SPAN, along with my colleague, Ben. Since C-SPAN's founding 45 years ago, the media world has changed. Remember when there were just a few TV channels? Now, we've got streaming, social media, apps, and more.
Through all of this, C-SPAN has stayed true to its mission of giving you unfiltered access to government wherever you get your news. As we navigate this challenging media environment with fewer people subscribing to traditional cable packages, our funding has been impacted.
That's why we're asking for your help to keep going strong for another 45 years. Please donate today at cspan.org/donate. Your contribution, large or small, helps ensure at least another 45 years of witnessing democracy in action.
Keep C-SPAN thriving in today's ever-changing media landscape. Visit cspan.org/donate to make your gift today. Thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast wherever you find your podcasts and on the free C-SPAN Now mobile app. Story from Bloomberg Law, a Biden rule imposing stricter tailpipe emission standards on automakers for new vehicles survived the Senate vote on a measure that would have gutted it. Senate advocates of the bill, including West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin, fell short of the 60 votes necessary to prohibit funds for putting the regulation in place. The administration finalized the rule March 20th, and the effort to overturn it failed Thursday on a 52-46 vote, short of the 60 needed. That was from Bloomberg Law. Before that vote, Senator John Barrasso, Republican from Wyoming, urged his fellow senators to vote in favor.
This legislation that we're talking about today would prohibit any government money from going to fund Joe Biden's obscene attacks against American cars and American trucks. Because every day, people in Wyoming rely on their cars and their trucks to get to work, to get to school, and to do the daily work of our economy. Agriculture, ranching, farming, great distances that people travel in Wyoming, and they need reliability. They need vehicles that they can trust, that they can count on. So this bill today is about defending their freedom, and it's against those who want to take away that freedom. What President Biden and the Democrats are trying to do, Madam President, is trying to force Americans to switch to electric vehicles. Vehicles that many people don't want, can't afford, aren't practical for them in their daily lives. Look, the actions by the Democrats and the EPA aren't driven by facts. They are driven by that party's blind faith in their climate religion, a faith that says we need to prioritize, as the president has told the EPA, prioritize climate over energy for our country that is affordable, available, or reliable. How's that way out? How do people feel about that? Which do you want? You want energy that's affordable, available, reliable? Well, then you're going to be for this piece of legislation that we're talking about today. But for the climate alarmists who continue to come to this floor and harp about the issues, let me point out to them the inconvenient truth. And the inconvenient truth is the American people do not want to buy EVs, and they actually are voting with their feet. They aren't buying electric vehicles. They simply aren't interested in that car or the truck that they know is too expensive, too unreliable, and for them, too inconvenient. That's what it's about.
Senator John Barrasso, Republican from Wyoming, on the Senate floor. Senator Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, opposed the bill.
I am here today to defend the Environmental Protection Agency's vehicle emission standards, standards that will cut air pollution to tackle the climate crisis, protect public health, and save drivers money at the pump. And these standards for passenger vehicles, cars, SUVs, and light trucks will help us accelerate towards our climate targets and put the brakes on our dependence on fossil fuels. Last year, we imported 8.5 million barrels of oil every single day of petroleum products, including gasoline, while simultaneously exporting more than 10 million barrels a day. But you want to hear something? You know who we were importing oil from? Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Oman. And what does this proposal do that the Republicans want to propound here? It's to say, no, we don't want to move to an electric vehicle future. No, we don't want to in any way send a signal that we are a technological giant as the United States, and we're going to back out that imported oil so that we're not contributing those petrodollars to those nations, which are ultimately intent on undermining stability.
Senator Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, on the Senate floor. Senate voted 52-46 against repealing the EPA's tailpipe emission rule for cars and small trucks because 60 votes were needed. Voting yes, all Republicans plus Democrats, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, John Tester of Montana, and also independent Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona. Wall Street Today, the Dow up 22, NASDAQ down 81, S&P down 11. From the New York Times, a broad coalition of the Kennedy family endorsed President Biden on Thursday at a campaign rally in Philadelphia, pointedly rejecting one of their own in Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the independent candidate who many Democrats believe poses a significant threat to Mr. Biden's reelection chances. Among the relatives of Mr. Kennedy who backed Mr. Biden were his siblings, Joseph, Carrie, Rory, Kathleen, Maxwell, and Christopher. Roughly a dozen Kennedys appeared at the rally, where Kerry Kennedy introduced Mr. Biden. Joe Kennedy III, Mr. Kennedy's nephew and a former Democratic congressman from Massachusetts, was expected to introduce the president at a second event. That was reporting from the New York Times. Here's part of that introduction today by Kerry Kennedy.
He is the first sitting president in our history who has traveled to an active war zone, not under U.S. control, not once, but twice, to show support for our allies. He was always running into the flames so we don't have to. In every imaginable way, President Biden has spent his presidency and his career running into the flames for working people, for moms, dads, families. He supports unions, a passion of my father's. He marched with the United Auto Workers during their righteous strike, which helped bring that strike to a swift end. Thank you, Joe Biden. He looks out for teachers, nurses, truck drivers, gig workers. He has been tireless on relieving the debt incurred by middle and working class kids trying to get ahead by getting an education. Thank you, Joe Biden. He passed the infrastructure bill. He builds bridges. He has made the working American the hero of every story. Thank you, Joe Biden. He got inflation under control, and violent crime is down in America under Joe Biden's leadership. He has us thriving again, believing again, behaving like good neighbors again. He stepped into the flames of chaos and turned it into community. Thank you, Joe Biden. We want to make crystal clear our feeling that the best way forward for America is to re-elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to 4 more years. Four more years.
Kerry Kennedy joining a dozen other members of the Kennedy family at a Biden-Harris re-election campaign event in Philadelphia with President Joe Biden.
Today, we face another inflection point in history. The 2024 election is about two fundamentally different visions for America. Donald Trump's vision is one of anger, hate, revenge, and retribution. He embraces the insurrectionist of January the 6th. He's running on it. And as mentioned already, he promised to be a dictator on day one, his own words. And he called for, he means it. And he calls for another bloodbath when he loses again. Look, your family, the Kennedy family, has endured such violence. Denying January 6th and whitewashing what happens is absolutely outrageous. I have a very different view of America, one of hope and optimism, like I hope all of you do. Optimism that Bobby Kennedy embodied. I see America where we defend democracy, not diminish it. I see America where we protect our freedoms, not take them away. And I see an America where the economy grows from the middle out and the bottom up. And that way, the middle class does well and the poor have a shot. And where health care is a right, not a privilege.
President Joe Biden at a campaign stop in Philadelphia with members of the Kennedy family. CNN has a story that independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. officially qualified for the ballot in Michigan, a key battleground state that could prove pivotal in deciding the outcome of the 2024 presidential election. Campaign announced on Thursday that Kennedy and his Running mate Nicole Shanahan were nominated by the Natural Law Party, a minor party with ballot access in the state. That was from CNN. And from CBS, 12 New Yorkers have been selected to serve as jurors in former President Donald Trump's criminal trial in Manhattan, filling out the panel on the third day of proceedings. 12 jurors include 7 men and 5 women, chosen from a pool of dozens of potential jurors who submitted to questioning about their personal lives and political views. The selection process will continue Friday, since 6 alternate jurors are needed before the trial can move to opening arguments. One alternate had been selected as of Thursday afternoon. Judge Juan Merchan said after the new jurors swore an oath to decide the case in a fair and impartial manner, "We have our jury." Donald Trump, seated at the defense table, stared at the newly sworn-in members as they exited the courtroom. Merchan said the court is on track to begin opening statements as soon as Monday. Prosecutors will present their case first. That was from CBS News. And after the day's proceedings outside the courtroom in New York City, Donald Trump spoke for about 5 minutes.
So, thank you very much. I wanted to just say that I'm supposed to be in New Hampshire. I'm supposed to be in Georgia. I'm supposed to be in North Carolina, South Carolina. I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning. But I've been here all day on a trial that really is a very unfair trial. These are all stories. This is over the last few days from legal experts. This is Wall Street Journal editorial. But all of these are stories from legal experts saying how this is not a case. The case is ridiculous. This is another one. The case is a ridiculous Trump indictment. It's missing fraud. There is no fraud. All of these stories are stories of how, and these are done by the experts and editorials, Bragg falsified business record, and he falsifies them. He's the one. He's the fraud. But take a look at all of these are our stories. You see them here. Bragg's indictment even falls as an indictment. All of them. Bragg crosses the Rubicon, indicting Trump on that sense. The whopping outrage in Trump's indictment. It's a whopping outrage, and it is an outrage. Everybody's outraged by it. You know, we had 18 DA or DA types, or close, 18 or 19 or 21, they counted all their in and out, like, and in the meantime, you have murders going on right outside in New York. Look at this National Review, another National Review. Jonathan Turley, Greg Jarrett, Andrew McCarthy, every one of them saying they call it a zombie case, meaning it is no case. And they say, is it constitutional? They don't think the case is. These are all stories that have taken place over the last few days. Take a look at this. D.A. Bragg wants us to believe that his pursuit of Trump isn't political. Of course it's political. And they're doing it for Biden. They're doing this for Joe Biden. Even the Rolling Stone, no friend of mine, they don't like, it says, they don't like Bragg's chances on this case. It's a disgrace. That's a nice headline. I'd like to read that one too. But everyone who lies about the case, justice is on trial. You know, the whole world is watching this New York scam. The trial spectacle begins. That's Wall Street Journal. It's a spectacle. Every one of these. America is a third world country. Daily Caller. Wow. That's New York Magazine, even. All of them. They just came out. These are all, every single one. I haven't seen one that says it's a good trial. It's political. This is a Wall Street Journal editorial. And it's a shame. It's a shame. And I'm sitting here for days now, from morning till night, in that freezing room. Freezing. Everybody was freezing in there. And all for this, and this is your result. Look at that. Each one of them is a story. And it's very unfair, very bad thing. Very bad thing. The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess, and you have the leading candidate and leading crooked Joe Biden by a lot. He's the one that should be in trial. He's a crook. You got a crooked president. He should be in trial with all the stuff he's done and his family. He should be in trial. But he's the one in charge. His top people are here working with the DA's office to make sure everything goes right. But it shouldn't go right because they have no case. And that's what this is all about. And it really is a shame. This country is devolving into a third world country between having no borders, having no justice, we have no justice, and having a press that doesn't want to cover the facts. So thank you very much. See you tomorrow.
The juror called you selfish. How does that make you feel?
Former President Donald Trump, Republican presidential candidate this year, at his hush money criminal case in Manhattan outside the courthouse. After, on the third day of jury selection, 12 jurors were chosen and sworn in. Jury selection will continue on Friday for the alternates. The judge said that opening statements could begin as early as Monday. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter Word for Word and get the stories making headlines in Washington sent to your inbox every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night.